of Actuarial Services. That's a two-person.
I'd like to call to order this hearing on the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee for Friday, January 9th. First order of business is I was remiss on Wednesday in not introducing the new page for the committee, which I would like to do at this time. Her name is Allison Jones. Right there. She's a graduate from St. Olaf, and I hope that you will have pleasant interactions with her during this session. So we're very pleased that she's with us and accepted a job with our committee. The second order of business is to approve the minutes from Wednesday, January 7th.
Madam Chair, I'll so move.
Senator Betzel moves approval of the minutes of January 7th, Wednesday. Any objections to that motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We have scheduled two hearings this week on the recent experiences in Minnesota of our 2008 election. On Wednesday, we limited our focus to the actual experiences on Election Day and things that happened before Election Day, comments about judge training, et cetera, and then the experience of voters and election judges and election officials actually on Election Day. Obviously, we have more issues than that to look at with regard to the experiences of this election. So today, we're going to focus on the recount process, what went right with it, what are possible improvements that can be made in it, and then also because it was an element of controversy within the recount, the whole issue of absentee ballots and ways in which we can make that process not only easier but better for Minnesota voters, and particularly making sure that those that cast a legitimate absentee ballot have some confidence that their ballot is actually going to be accepted and eventually counted, including issues with regard to absentee ballots and voter registration at the same time. We've invited a number of people to testify, and we will begin with Secretary of State Mark Ritchie. We do have, by the way, an addition to, for those of you that picked up the agenda, number 8th on our list, it will be Kent Kaiser, who has worked for the Secretary of State's office in the past for both Secretary of State Ritchie and Secretary of State Kiffmeyer. Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mark Ritchie, and I serve as Minnesota's Secretary of State. I'm joined here by my head of government affairs, Beth Frazier. 2008 was a great year for Minnesota's democracy. We celebrated our state's sesquicentennial by voting in all-time record numbers, almost 2.93 million ballots cast in the November 4th election. We were number one again in the nation, this time by 5 percentage points above the number two state, which I'm sorry to say was Wisconsin. This is something we should be rightfully proud of, something we've worked hard to make possible and to make happen. But it also means that 22% of our eligible voters, over 750,000, were still unable or did not choose to vote. Some parts of our state vote in the 90% or above range, including the city of Duluth. Unusual to have a city voting in such high percent of its eligible voters. We believe that someday all Minnesotans can be voting in that range, all areas of our state, and we will be working to continue to improve turnout overall as we go forward. During this past year, our office had the privilege of conducting 6 election recounts. 5 of them were mandatory under Minnesota law, where if a margin is less than 0.5%, it's required, and we do it on our dime. The Office of Secretary of State conducts those recounts. One of them was conducted under a bill that your committee passed last year, which permits a partial recount at the request of a candidate at the cost of just the partial recount. And so that was an unusual but a very good experience to learn, and we think that law is a great improvement, keeping Minnesota really ahead nationally in terms of reforms in election administration. There were lots of other recounts conducted at the city and county level that we do not have the responsibility for, including one, not necessarily a recount, but in Farmington, there was an exact tie and there was a flip of a coin, which is how Minnesota law stipulates the breaking of a tie in an election. So I haven't had the privilege of doing the coin flipping experience yet, but I look forward to that. 2 of those recounts were statewide. One's famous. One of them not so famous, but very, very important in the story and in the opportunity to learn from the recounts of this year. In the primary election, some of you may remember, so in September, there was a very close race for the second position on the ballot for the Minnesota Supreme Court seat held by Associate Justice Gilday. Our Elections Division Director, Gary Poser, anticipated the possibility of a recount in that race and had made a plan and arrangements with the county election officials to be our partners if there was to be a recount in that race. I do remember the moment in the evening when I heard a big groan down the hall, and I assume it was at that moment that we became clear that we were going to have a recount in a statewide race. We, of course, have not had one in a statewide race since 1962, but there have been a lot of major recounts, St. Louis County, congressional races, others. But, it doesn't happen every year. This year we happen to have 2. Thanks to Mr. Poser's incredible foresight, based on his many, many years of experience and the excellent planning that his staff had done, we were able to complete the recount part at the local level in less than 3 days. We had the whole result in 2 weeks. This is very important in a primary because, unlike a general election where there is not a date certain that it must be done, in a primary election you have to settle who's going to be on the ballot before you can print the ballot and then mail it to our service members and others overseas or whomever is using the vote-by-mail system. It is crucial that any recount in a primary be done very quickly and accurately, and that any other issues get settled so that that ballot can be printed and mailed to meet all the other state and federal laws that stipulate how absentee and mail voting is completed. Recounts in the primary on a statewide basis, again, fairly unusual, but they do happen. We're not totally clear on all the costs yet because we've been a little busy with the elections and everything else, but it probably was about $25,000, something to that effect, to do that recount in that primary. So it was a good reminder of all the different things that we need to keep in mind. Proposals for runoff elections, instant or otherwise, have to be consistent with state laws about protecting the rights of Minnesotans that serve in the military or otherwise use absentee voting. We have to keep the absentee voters in mind at all times in this process. We also learned in that particular experience that having that one opportunity to do a statewide recount in every county at the local level both brought new county election officials up to speed in terms of how we wanted to be running a recount, but also gave everyone a lot of confidence that when we might have, which it turned out we did, a statewide recount in a larger race, the people knew what they were doing and knew how to proceed. Again, Mr. Poser anticipated a recount in this Senate race and made arrangements with most counties that they would be our partners in the general election and made the arrangement that we would pay counties 3 cents a ballot for their participation. There are, generally speaking, 2 ways to do statewide recounts. One of them, which we can see in the 1962 example and which has also been planned before in our office, which is to bring all the ballots to the armory or some big place and to count them all. About $2 million estimated cost. Another way is to have the ballots counted by the local election officials out in the communities where the ballots exist, where the professional staff exist, where people who really know how to run elections are in place. You know, I'll come to this later, but that procedure cost about $200,000, or one-tenth the cost of a centralized count. But the secret is having cooperative relationships, because this responsibility is one of our Office of Secretary of State. So when local election officials join with us as our partners, they're doing it above and beyond the call of duty. We did not reimburse them for what their real costs are. I want to come back to that. But we were able to do it at one-tenth the cost of what others had planned because we had this partnership with local people. So Mr. Poser anticipated a recount in the Senate race. He had made a plan. The plan was being implemented in terms of agreements by the local election officials. It turns out that, yes, indeed, there was a triggering of the mandatory recount. Any election in the November 4th, this particular election, if it had been within 15,000 votes, roughly speaking, 3 million ballots, 15,000 is a 0.5%, anything less than 15,000 vote margin would have triggered a recount. Of course, we had a 215 vote margin, so you know, this was an extremely close race, but it could have been a larger spread and still have triggered a recount. That's something that is important to keep in mind as we look forward. Anyhow, it was triggered. We had a plan in place. Mr. Poser and his team began working out the arrangements. The 87 counties plus about another 20 cities or clusters of cities agreed to be our deputized local recount areas. Some of you might have been able to observe the process yourself in person, but perhaps you saw it on television. But it was a fairly simple and straightforward process. The local election officials opened the ballots. They took the ballots and they began placing them in three piles: votes for Mr. Coleman, votes for Mr. Franken, and votes for somebody else, or ballots that whose intention could not be known. Maybe there were two marked or no marks or something else or some other reason to disqualify the ballot, like an identifying mark. If either representative objected to the decision of the local election official, it was challenged, put into another pile. Eventually, those came down to us here in St. Paul. It was a kind of laborious process, tedious, yes, but that's how it is in looking at 3 million ballots. And at the end of the day, each ballot that was challenged had a sticker on the back that said the challenge, what the challenge was about, who challenged it, that sort of thing. All those challenged ballots were sealed and then sent down to us here by courier, and they were in a secure, guarded facility nearby, and were kept for the purposes of the recount and also for any other future purposes in very safe shape. There were about 6,665 initially challenged ballots, but after a bit of discussion and some prompting by the State Canvassing Board, 5,500 and some of those were withdrawn, and about 1,000 came before the State Canvassing Board. Challenges are supposed to be limited to just ones where there's a real dispute on intent or a dispute on the question of identifying marks. Obviously, there were 5,000 and some that were frivolous, and perhaps we need to look at the system that would give us a better outcome in terms of reducing those number of frivolous challenges, because every challenge, even if it's ultimately withdrawn, requires the local election officials to make four copies of it all and to track them. It requires scanning and the maintenance of databases. It's a lot of work to keep track of all of those if only 1,000 were legitimate challenges. But in any case, the state constitution creates the institution we call the State Canvassing Board. 150 years ago, people had the wisdom to create an institution to handle close elections and elections where there was controversy. Constitution requires me to call to my assistants two justices of the state Supreme Court and two disinterested judges of the district court. My goal was to get the top jurists in the state, and I was very, very, very privileged to get four of the top jurists in the state. It was a great privilege and honor to work with the five of us together on a team, and the fact that these justices and judges, who had lots of other things to do, very busy dockets and schedules from murder trials on over, holiday season, everything else, they gave an incredible amount of time, both in the meetings, but in the time between meetings and before, doing legal research and everything else. Minnesotans are very fortunate to have these great leaders in our judicial system, and I so appreciated their work. It was very politically diverse, but it was a really, really talented and expert group of people, and I think we did great work. Our work was focused on the process of consensus, and we were fortunate in that because at the local level, 99.97% decisions of the local election official were confirmed by the two candidates. That's an incredible amount of agreement given the emotion and the tension of this whole thing. At the level of state canvassing board, all of our major decisions were made by consensus, always 5-0, and almost 95% of our decision on ballots were 5-0 unanimous decisions. This process was run on a consensus basis, and I think that's what Minnesotans expected.
Mr. Secretary, what,
yes.
On what kinds of issues that, was there not consensus? Just curious.
Lizard people. Was lizard people a legitimate name of a person? Some of the voters had names like muskrat. Some voters had names like one of them's name was gopher. So was lizard people the name of a person and therefore a legitimate name to use for a write-in, or was it a kind of a joke that was just used to be funny in a ballot sort of way?
Mm-hmm.
And we had
and
differences of opinion on this point.
I see. And what about decisions other than on ballots? What would have characterized a disagreement among the members of the canvassing board?
I'm not thinking or coming up with any other disagreements, but there were two questions on the ballots, intent of the voter and identifying marks. And what we did was to develop very quickly our sort of pattern of decision about a particular mark or particular item. And actually, Chief Justice Magnuson had a little hieroglyphics chart that he kept. And our focus was on pattern and then precedent and then consistency. Once we knew how we wanted to react to a type of vote, then we have a way of noting that this is our precedent, and our goal was consistency throughout the process, and we had certain little sheets of paper that helped us keep track. I note that in the book about the 1962 recount, that was also something developed. The book actually has a great section on this. But for me, it was the talent and skill of jurists who think in terms of pattern, precedent, and consistency that helped shape the process. And not only did it give us the ability to be 95% in agreement, but it also meant that we could go very, very rapidly because we knew what we were doing. And the goal was always accuracy and transparency. I don't care how long it takes. I have until November of 2010, personally. But we want to keep the process moving, and because these jurists think and act and work along those lines, it made it possible to go through the process well.
Madam Chair?
Senator Day.
Yep. Madam Chair and Secretary, the people that I've talked to in my district, and one of the bothersome things that they have come up with to me, and that's the reason I want to ask the question of you, because I kind of feel the same way. Why is it that we should have five people sitting around if the stupidity is such that there's Y's and arrows and X's and whatever? Why isn't it that we can put it in a machine, and if the machine can't read what somebody is trying to vote for, I personally don't care if they're disfranchised or not, and most of the people that I talk to don't really care, because if you're educated and you can't fill an oval in, is something that for 50 years I did it, I think, a long time ago anyway, for Iowa tests and whatever, that people have to sit around a table and figure out what people are actually thinking, how they're voting. Would it be better? Now, this is where I'm trying to ask the question to see if we could resolve something. Would it be better that if you cannot, if some machine can't read it, that's it. We just don't sit around and spend and go through 5 or 10,000 ballots that somebody might want to have voted for somebody, or they didn't want to, or they had arrows, or they wrote in wrong names, or whatever. I don't even know. That seems to me just to be a huge waste of time. So explain to me where I'm wrong here on that.
Mr. Secretary?
Madam Chair, Senator Day, the founders of our nation and the writers of the Minnesota Constitution did not require that the citizens only be able to vote if they can comply with the demands of the machine manufacturers. My grandmother, sharp as a tack until the day she died, shook. She could not fill in a circle. So if the proposal is that if you can't comply with the conditions of the manufacturer of machines, wonderful machines that give us great accuracy and great, very timely results in most respect, then you don't get to vote, then that's a dramatic change from the founders of the nation and the writers of the Minnesota Constitution. It is a proposal that I've heard from many people who've been disparaging if you cannot fill in a circle. That breaks my heart when I think about my grandmother and that somebody is saying she should not be allowed to vote because the machine manufactured by a company in Taiwan cannot read her vote.
Madam Chair,
Senator Day.
And Mr. Secretary, if that's the case, and we do have thousands of people, then we're doing a huge disservice to have machines. Let's have paper ballots. Let's go back to paper ballots and do 3 million of them, and let's then try and decipher what everybody voted for, and we'll have this latitude that your grandmother or whoever can't figure out how to vote would have. I could handle that, too. Then we maybe, because what this pointed out, because it was a close election, and we have always thought, and I think I take great pride in what you people done. I think you're very admirable, the five people. I take great pride in I live in a state that 78% of people vote and whatever. But what this actually proved to me is that we really do have some major, major flaws in our system. They're not as accurate as what I always thought they were. And our committee or whatever committee in the state, hopefully, is going to try and figure out a few things wherever we can help you and help local election officials, which the other day when I in the committee before, when I heard party people standing around watching over election officials, I don't buy into that either. Get out of the room. I have great confidence in people that run the polls, and my goodness, I've been in 14 elections, and so I have great confidence that they counted the votes that I was in all elections I was in right. But yet, on the other hand, that's another issue. But maybe if you're telling me that somebody should be reading the votes, then, every time we have one that isn't a close recount, somebody's votes isn't being counted anyway.
Madam Chair, Senator Day, that's right. In fact, that's why the law stipulates that if an election is less than 0.5%, we count it by hand. Fortunately, we vote on paper. Fortunately, we have a record of every person's vote. 1,000 people out of 3 million was a tiny, tiny number that were not agreed by a local election official who's a professional and two candidate representatives who have a lot at stake in trying to game the system. So I felt like 1,000 was a really tiny number. The five of us handled them in 4 days, and we did it in a way that made us proud to be part of a system that's 150 years old but is as modern as the 21st century. The fast machines we use are extremely accurate for what they do, and they give the news media what they want, which is instant results, although now the news media uses polling during the day so that they know the results even before we're done. But the process we have in this state, and of course we've only done six this year, so maybe if we did 60, I might have other suggestions, but we did six recounts, and this particular one is a model for the nation. I get calls from secretaries all over the country saying, wow, how did you do it? How were you able to do it? It's so great that you have these laws and you have this structure to make this happen. We have problems in some of our voting systems, and the absentee ballot one, you know, is one that we've discussed and that they'll bring more. But from my point of view, what this recount showed is what a fantastic system we have built here in 150 years. The skill of our local election officials in the midst of a very high energy and high emotional election to count accurately, and for the wisdom of five people looking at the ballots of people who, like my grandmother, know how to vote, they just can't keep inside of a circle because they've gotten old.
Senator Olsen.
You know, as we have this discussion, I'm so grateful that people that sat around these tables long before us put in voter intent, because I think, you know, that's what our nation is built on, the ability of people to have the right to vote. But following up along Senator Day's comments, I do have a question about, because I was doing a kids vote in our precinct, and I did see where somebody had misvoted and the machine kicked the ballot out. And the poll worker appropriately asked if they could approach, and it was handled very professionally. But my question then is, like, some of these ones where I went down and observed you guys counting, and they might have just crossed, everything was checked off. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't that kicked out at the precinct by the machine? You know, some of those votes, like you said, there were some where obviously it looked like somebody who couldn't control their arm, and it was all scribbled in. Why weren't some of those kicked out and then like a poll worker saying, you know, maybe I should help you and we can vote on this other touch screen or something?
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, a lot of them were kicked out. Sometimes they weren't. Sometimes a person would hit the override. Sometimes an election judge would tell people to put X's. Some newspapers printed sample ballots where it had a check mark on the sample ballot. Some political parties distributed sample ballots in my community, Minneapolis, that had you circling the name of the person. I don't know why. So there's all kinds of ways that people come to alternate ways of marking their ballot that may not seem normal but just happen. But sometimes also in the absentee ballot world, and things are coming in, they come in different ways. But because this happened, the voter intent issues really go back to the 1880s and 90s. Most of the laws were made quite clear about the intent. In the 62 recount, there were a number of court rulings about issues related to markings and that kind of stuff. In the 52 Republican primary presidential, where there was questions about Eisenhower's name, the spelling, and the use of Ike, and all the business about a known nickname. So each part of our system today has a story from history where they tackled a problem or an issue, and then they solved it in a way that I found very helpful this time around. I think part of our story is that now suddenly Minnesotans have clearly said, we want to vote absentee and early. We had 300,000 this time. That's twice what we had in 06. Obviously, we are learning that we need to build our systems in a different way to be able to handle. So part of our contribution to the story of how to do recounts accurately and in a transparent way, and also in a cost-effective way, is that we will improve through your actions and through other suggestions of other people how we handle the absentee part of it. But some of these other issues have been, you know, historically always been part of the question. And if the machines are, you know, improved in terms of their accuracy and their speed on the one hand, they probably lose some smarts on the other hand. And so we'll always have the case, and I think some of the local election officials estimate it's somewhere two people per thousand or maybe three per thousand. We had 1,000 in 3 million, so it's a very tiny number in a statewide where it wasn't clear to the local election official. But we did have to look at the 3 million as the law does require.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary Ritchie, one of the things that people have expressed concern to me about is the fact that we were recounting the ballots from election night, but there was a group in Minneapolis of 133 ballots where there were no ballots to count in the recount. And to many people, that seems very inconsistent that if you're going to do a recount of ballots, that you have to have the ballots. Otherwise, if you're going to take the election night results, why are you doing a recount? And I still am very puzzled by what happened there and how ballots that were supposed to be secured vanished and how it was decided that those ballots that weren't there would be counted from the election night results. And I think it leaves a lot of questions in people's minds about the whole process and the validity of it when things like that happen.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, in the 3 billion ballots, one packet of ballots was missing. It was gone from election night. People searched for it. And the four judges and justices went through every lick of legal history in the state, all Supreme Court rulings, all law. And they said out loud, and we all agreed 5-0, that in a case like that, the case law in Minnesota and the Supreme Court rulings have been consistent that the machine total is the second best, and it is the evidence you use in the case when there is a missing packet of ballots, as there was in this case. The other thing that was important about that particular question was that the number of people who signed in to vote was the same as the number of ballots indicated by the machine total, and so that was a further kind of reinforcement of that previous juridical decision. But we were in unanimous agreement that that's what the state law and the Supreme Court rulings of the past 150 years required, and we took that action unanimously.
Well, Madam Chair, it is still a mystery as to what would have happened to the ballots that were supposed to be secured there. And it always raises a question in people's minds, I think.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, it's a disappointment to lose one packet in 3 million. It's always a disappointment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Day. Excuse me.
Madam Chair, that's good. Now, the opposite happened in, I believe, what, Maplewood, where weeks after the election, we turned up more ballots. So maybe you could explain that one to me.
Madam Chair, Senator Day, in all canvassing periods, so you've got actually 1 week, the local election officials have the responsibility to make sure that all numbers were accurately recorded, or if there were any transposition of numbers, if there are any machines that had not been fully counted or open. And so there's usually a movement of the numbers in that short period of time. I'm not familiar with that particular case, but that was at a local level, and you might want to ask the local election official about that. It was not something that ever came to the State Canvassing Board.
Senator Gimsey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary Ritchie, you know, at home and also on the national news, we're hearing about these instances where there were actually more ballots than people who were registered to vote. Are you assuring us today that all 87 counties, every precinct in the state of Minnesota, and that at every level, that the number of ballots cast was equal to or less than the number of registered voters then, so we can basically all go home tonight or today and discount the national stories that we're hearing and the discussions that we're hearing in the national media?
Mr. Secretary?
Madam Chair, Senator Gimsey, I'm not familiar with those national stories, but you can ask any one of the five of us at the State Canvassing Board, were we satisfied that the reports that we got from the 87 counties were absolutely the most accurate they could be humanly possible? Yes. Do we believe that there were human errors made that had to come to our board to be adjudicated? Yes. We feel very, very confident in our decisions, 95% which were unanimous, and we feel very confident that the final number is the number of how Minnesotans voted, eligible, valid Minnesota voters voted on election night, with the one exception being the felon who voted in War Road for Senator Coleman, and nothing can be done to reverse that particular problem, and nothing could have been done to prevent it unless his parole officer had found him or he had been given better information when he was released from prison.
Okay. Further comments?
I want to address the question of the absentee ballots because there's sort of two big issues facing us. 12,000 out of the 300,000 were rejected. And when asked, the local election officials went through those, and 1,350 roughly were wrongly rejected. So obviously we never want wrongly rejected ballots, and particularly absentee ballots, because these are our soldiers, our military personnel, people who went out of their way to get a ballot, you know, all that stuff. We never want those valid voters turned away. And I think there are things that can be done to improve the process and to improve training at the local level. I think we can deal with that and get that number of rejections that were errors down near zero. As long as there are humans and machines involved, there are going to be mistakes, but we can minimize them. But it's the 10,000 and some rightly, properly rejected absentees that I'm equally concerned about. These are citizens, soldiers, and others who went out of their way, did a lot of extra work to get their ballots in, and for often sort of bureaucratic reasons, they were rejected. And I think there are ways that the system can be streamlined. I think there are some educational things we can do. I think there are going to be suggestions coming forward from the local election officials and from others about things we can do to address that 10,000 and some eligible, valid Minnesota voters who didn't get to vote in this election because of a particular thing that was wrong and a very complicated, somewhat bureaucratic process that you have to go through to vote absentee. And so I'm really looking forward to that. A final concern I want to bring to your attention, what is related to the question from Senator Gimsey, which is there has been a tremendous amount of often just plain false information circulated about this recount. And sometimes it generates a very large volume of email, mail, letters, sometimes quite angry and basically inappropriate for family viewing. But in that process, I think elected officials have a responsibility to repudiate when they hear lies and smearing, personal attacks, particularly against our local election officials, which is the thing that was most alarming, was the ways that lies were created and then repeated over and over about some of our local election officials and about others involved in this process. This is something that perhaps there's nothing we can do about, but this is something that I believe elected officials have a lot of responsibilities to pay attention to, and that Minnesotans deserve that kind of responsible action by our elected officials. The recount is not finished. We still have some responsibilities, data practices requests coming in from people all over the country. There are things that we will have to do to continue moving the process forward. In the midst of doing all of that, we will be trying to give you a very specific set of legislative proposals, and some of them may be rules proposals related to legislation. And we will do it as quickly as we can. We're trying to blend in learning the lessons from the recount and the whole election process, because it was our biggest one ever, with completing the task of the recount so that we can provide you with the best possible ideas for your consideration. We'll do this as quickly as possible. Thank you again, Madam Chairs and members of the committee. If there are any more questions, we're happy to answer them.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Secretary Ritchie. There's another category of these rejected ballots. Of the 1,300 wrongly rejected, there was about 400, roughly 200 from each campaign that were challenged, where the local election officials said this was wrongly rejected. I understand the Supreme Court, gave them that power, but I was just going to ask for your – I mean, that actually kind of troubled me a little bit, and I will go through an anecdote. I mean, I did have – neighbors of mine in the neighboring township, Sturgeon Lake Township, where they applied, six of them applied for absentee ballots. They were sent the correct ballots. They filled them out perfectly, returned them to the county perfectly, six voters, my neighbors and friends. And the county sent those ballots. There's Sturgeon Lake City within Sturgeon Lake Township. I can't remember if it was city to township or township to city, but the county returned the ballots to the wrong jurisdiction. And
It was totally an official mistake, not a mistake of the individuals voting, and one of the campaigns challenged all six of those votes, and they never were counted. And so it was a disenfranchisement of, you know, six of my friends and neighbors that particularly troubled me, and I was going to ask for your thoughts on whether that was appropriate and
Madam Chair, Certiorari, I just do what the Supreme Court says, and they are always right.
Well, we may have some legislation that directs them to make a different decision or not be involved in the decision. I agree with you. Yeah, I
thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. I just found it incredible that not challenging a ballot, I understand that, but that they would, that political campaigns would have the opportunity to tell someone that their ballot can't even be opened. To me, that is a government function and not a campaign function. I do believe, I mean, I know you did what the Supreme Court decided, but it's not the same thing as actually being able to look at a ballot and challenge that. I mean, they challenge the eligibility of the ballot before they even looked at it. And after the ballots were open, fine. The absentee ballots, if there was mistakes, fine. But that political campaigns would have that authority, to me, is was a mistaken decision on the part of the Supreme Court, and I hope that we can find a way that we can not have that involvement at that particular level. Challenge the ballot is one thing. Challenge the eligibility of the ballot to be counted is something else. Thank you very much,
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary.
I'd like to invite Keisha Gaskins, the Executive Director of League of Women Voters Minnesota, to and Mike Dean, Common Cause Minnesota, and Mark Halverson, Citizens for Election Integrity Minnesota, to comment on, again, the recount process and absentee ballots. Who would like to begin?
I'll begin.
If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Mark Halverson. I am the founder and director of Citizens for Election Integrity Minnesota. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, statewide organization that promotes accurate, verifiable, and transparent elections. Along with the League of Women Voters, Minnesota, we have organized two statewide citizen observations of the last two audits in 2006 and also in 2008. Last November, Common Cause Minnesota joined us to form a nonpartisan coalition to launch a statewide nonpartisan observation of the recount, and this also included observation of other recounted races in addition to the U.S. Senate race. And I want to point out that this is the first time, to my knowledge, anywhere in the country that there has been an organized citizen nonpartisan observation of a manual statewide count. So we are very proud of the work that we did. Our organization's preliminary report of the 2008 audit and recount observations will be available later next week. A guiding principle of our organization is that every vote that is properly cast must be counted. I was therefore alarmed by the December 18th Minnesota Supreme Court decision, which essentially gave the campaigns veto power over previously rejected absentee ballots. It is the election officials with guidance from the Office of the Secretary of State who have the authority to make this decision. allowing campaigns to overrule the decision of election officials is inappropriate. When I observed the actual review of these absentee ballots in Hennepin County last week, I was appalled. Each time one of the party representatives objected to an improperly rejected ballot, they were essentially disenfranchising those voters. Another constitutional right. Minnesota's election system is considered a model for being fair, but this decision by the Supreme Court, I believe, was the low point in the recount. The nonpartisan recount observers, as well as anyone who followed the news, are well aware of the large number of frivolous challenges that occurred during the recount. Even the candidates agreed that thousands of these challenges were frivolous by the early withdrawal of those challenges. We believe that election officials should be given greater authority and provided with meaningful oversight to stop frivolous challenges and at the same time provided guidelines to prevent officials from dismissing legitimate challenges. It was also a poor use of state resources when the canvassing board had to spend so much time with frivolous challenges, not to mention all of the resources required to separate out those withdrawn challenges. The recount was conducted in a transparent manner that allowed each citizen to observe the level of integrity in the process. I believe our voting and recount process is basically sound. We cast our votes on paper, which is then tabulated by the optical scan machines. In the case of a recount, they are again counted manually to make it a more precise determination of voter intent that the machines, as was previously discussed by Secretary Ritchie, cannot make that accurate determination. At the same time, we can learn from this unprecedented scrutiny how to make the process better. Overall, I believe the recount has been conducted in a fair, professional, and methodical manner. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Halverson. Who's next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota, a nonpartisan government watchdog group. The 2008 election was a historic election in many respects. The high interest in voter participation in Minnesota and nationally should be celebrated, but has also put a large strain on the system. Despite that intense pressure, Minnesota's election system performed extremely well. We did not see any large-scale meltdowns similar to those that occurred in Florida 2000 or Ohio in 2004. However, the bright spotlight of the Minnesota Senate recount has allowed us to further examine the election process and identify areas that need reform. The most glaring problem was the 12,000 rejected absentee ballots. It is a travesty to have so many voters cast a ballot and then have their vote not counted. Article 7, Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitution guarantees the right of every person 18 years of age or more who has been a citizen of the United States for 3 months and who has resided in the precinct for 30 days the right to vote. Sadly, deficiencies in our election administration and procedures undermine that right by disenfranchising so many voters. These defects can be and should be remedied. The most glaring deficiency occurred when voters received incorrect materials or information from election officials. Specifically, 25 voters in New Brighton were given the wrong absentee ballot, and then they were not asked to fill out a voter registration form. As a result of this error, these individuals will not have their vote counted in the 2008 election. Individuals should have their voting rights protected from the errors of government officials. When election officials in Ramsey County discovered the error and moved to have these votes included, both Coleman and Franken campaigns objected to the inclusion of these ballots. Unfortunately, these objections were allowed to stand because of the process created by the state Supreme Court to review and include wrongly rejected absentee ballots, and that process was flawed. It took the process out of the hands of nonpartisan actors, local election officials, and put it in the hands of political campaigns. That decision led to voters being disenfranchised because of their political beliefs. There was a clear pattern of voters in Republican-leaning areas being disproportionately challenged by Franken and voters in Democratic-leaning areas being disproportionately challenged by Coleman. In Scott County, of the 43 challenge ballots, 38 or 88% were challenged by the Franken campaign. And in St. Louis County, of the 60 challenged absentee ballots, 58 or 96% were challenged by the Coleman campaigns. This is not acceptable. Election rules should never be interpreted by partisans. But what's most disturbing is that these voters have no true remedy to appeal these partisan decisions and have their votes counted. The remedy process outlined by State Statute 204B.44, Errors in Omissions, provides too high of a hurdle for average voters to use to have their votes included. The process basically requires an individual to retain counsel and file a lawsuit to have that issue addressed. The legislature should empower local or state canvassing boards to review and address errors of wrongly rejected absentee ballots. Lastly, I want to address the absentee ballot process for those voting overseas. In reviewing the rejected absentee ballots, about 10% of the ballots were rejected because election officials did not receive the ballots in time. There is a very small window in which an individual can request, receive, and send out the ballot. The Pew Center for the States estimates that Minnesota military personnel voting overseas have a cushion of fewer than 5 days to accommodate any voting delays in the process. This is because Minnesota election law only requires ballots to go out 30 days before an election. There is just not enough time to transport the ballot, execute the ballot, and return the ballot, even with the reforms that the legislature made during the last session. In the coming months, I strongly urge legislators to look into these issues and identify ways, such as early voting, to ensure that every eligible Minnesota voter that wants to vote can vote. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Dean? Ms. Gaskins.
Madam Chair, my name is Keisha Gaskins. I'm the Executive Director for the League of Women Voters Minnesota. The League is extremely concerned by the 12,000 rejected absentee ballots in this election. It's approximately 4% of the total absentee ballots cast. And as a consequence, as we look at the
Excuse me, could you move the microphone a little bit closer?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Scoot in. That relatively high number reflects a problem with confusion and cumbersome nature of the absentee ballot process. We believe there must be some consideration given to modifying the multi-step process that gives any number of opportunities for confusion and error both on the part of the voters and on the part of election officials. We also believe that it should be made possible for voters to track their absentee ballots. Election officials have previously testified that most votes are barcoded. As a consequence, voters should be able to have the opportunity to track those ballots independently rather than relying on already overburdened county election officials to be able to have to call them up if something was rejected, if there was a problem with their vote, and it then empowers individual voters to become part of the process and track and keep track of their own votes. We also mentioned in our testimony on Wednesday, our very serious concern about absentee voters voting by agency, people who are disabled or otherwise unable to vote at the last minute, people in hospitals, people in nursing homes who firmly believe they were going to be able to vote and make it to the ballot location on election day. We at the League, as you all are aware, ran a very comprehensive and very effective statewide hotline, and we received a large number of calls on election day. And unfortunately, we had to tell people calling after 12 o'clock in the afternoon on election day, if you are who are a fair distance away from their home county, it's too late. You are never going to get back to the county, get the form, get back to someone who wants to vote, and allow that person to cast a vote. There are a number of possible remedies. We know that there are statewide ballots available, and to make statewide ballots available for people voting outside their precinct in the absentee process would be a real solution for many of these people who are longtime citizens and longtime voters and want to maintain that process. Finally, we'd like to see Minnesota move to a no-excuse absentee ballot voting process. Presently, a voter may vote absentee if they can demonstrate they'll be out of the precinct or otherwise unavailable on election day. The ability for voters to simply vote absentee because they choose is a natural next step. It is important to develop a system of voting that actually reflects the way Minnesotans actually live. We should be making every effort to ensure that every eligible voter's right to vote is easy to get, easy to use, easy to move from place to place, while maintaining the highest standards of accuracy and security. But at the end of the day, the idea of simply voting on election day is obsolete. When we look at the incidence of early voting around the country and we look at the expectations of voters, the expectation of voters to be able to vote in a way that they live to maximize the franchise, it's incredibly important that Minnesota stay out front on this issue and seriously consider taking on no-excuse absentee balloting. While our present system of absentee voting meets some of the needs and the standards, we know it can be improved to meet the needs of Minnesota voters while not threatening the integrity of our election process. Again, Madam Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. And we're available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Gaskins. Are there questions? Senator Sieben and then Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Gaskins, thank you for being here. I'm curious if the League is supportive of measures for early voting, because it seems to me as if there are 12,000 rejected absentee ballots, if the state had in place early voting procedures, then people could go to a polling place early. Perhaps many of those people, perhaps the Secretary of State would know how many absentee ballots, people who voted by absentee ballots were voting because they were going to be absent from the precinct, the number that used that excuse. If you had that information, I'd be curious to hear that. But it seems to me, if we could reduce the number of people who are voting by absentee by allowing people to vote early, then many of these problems would not have happened. So I'm curious if the League has a position on early voting in addition to no-excuse absentee voting.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Gaskins.
Thank you. The League's position is any reliable system that exists to expand the franchise is something that we should consider and implement. Minnesota already has in-person absentee, which operates in many ways, functions similar to early voting in other states. And so what we're hoping is if we can leave the in-person absentee option in place, for example, I believe the city of Minneapolis actually opened up City Hall the Saturday before for in-person absentee voting, immediately before the election, which we're very much in favor of. And we would just simply like to see that we have no excuse absentee in addition to those opportunities.
Senator Betzel?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a sense yet of how numerous some of these problems are. I keep hearing these anecdotes, and they're all legitimate, but questions about whether a signature in the voting registration record matches the absentee ballot. I read about the election judge in Duluth, who apparently the date on the absentee ballot didn't match the date that the witness put on. And I think at some point we're going to have to get a list of some of the problems that were if there's 12,000 votes, are there some consistencies in here or these random ones? It might also be helpful to find out if there's particular areas of the state, particular precincts, maybe that had a high number of rejections. I mean, that might tell us something if, say, one precinct, you know, had a lot of rejected absentee ballots and a neighboring precinct had zero. Maybe it's just some training or something that's happening at the local level that might be causing some of these problems to happen. But, you know, it's nice to, you know, it's very helpful to hear that, you know, there's a widespread problem, but I don't have a sense yet of why a lot of these ballots were rejected except by, you know, little bits and pieces, and I hope this is some area we can get into a little bit more in depth at some point.
thank you, Senator Betzel. I think some have suggested that absentee ballots be submitted and counted at the county level rather than sent out as a more standardized procedure, and you have consistency in applying whatever standards you might want to have across the state, but I and otherwise too, that there are obsolete requirements that were meaningful when we had only paper ballots, both in the election process and in the absentee ballot process, that this recount has suggested, I think, that we reconsider and really do be thinking about a 21st century voting process, even if some of us may not be real huge fans of early voting or IRV or some other innovations that are being adopted across the country.
Well, Madam Chair, I certainly agree that if people want to vote by absentee, we ought to make that easier. As I say, to this point, I personally don't have a sense as to why 12,000 were rejected.
Right.
Is it because of the laws that we have? Is it because of the local interpretations? I don't know that. And whether consolidate them at one place is a good idea or not, I don't know, simply because I don't know if there's some areas of the state that had a high percentage of them rejected and others did not. And until we can get more data on that, I don't think we're in a position to make recommended changes to the statutes.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Gaskin, I was wondering, you were talking about tracking your own absentee ballot, and I'm trying to envision this, how you think that might be accomplished.
Ms. Gaskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Roebling, one of the ideas as we were thinking about this was the idea that we already know that the votes are barcoded, and that conceivably once it's barcoded, once it's received by the clerk, and whether or not it's rejected or accepted, can be then tracked online. I mean, that's something that data can be given to a voter if these are barcoded when the ballot is sent out. And that then offers an opportunity for a voter themselves to access the information online. Ideally, this is something that would happen over time. It would require an investment at the various county level, but eventually it would get to the point to empower individual voters to be responsible for their own vote, tracking their own vote, and then lessening eventually some of the burden on county election officials as well, to have to reach out and identify every single voter where there was an error and try and find that voter and repair that error.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling?
This barcoding intrigues me. It's not the ballot that's barcoded, is it? Is it the envelope that the absentee ballot arrives in? Because we can't identify individual voters.
Right, so it would be the envelope, and then that would have to come back. So it's not a perfect system or a perfect idea. It is really more of the idea that says we've got to find more systems and really think creatively about how we're allowing voters who choose to engage in really maximizing the use of technology, that there are ways to do this without necessarily undermining the integrity of the process.
Senator Roebling, in Colorado, I believe it is, they not only have early voting, but they have you don't have to be in a precinct. You can vote by in shopping malls, et cetera, for a few weeks ahead of time. And at one conference that I was at, the proponents of that were really extolling it, because they could go and check online to see that their vote had been received. And what happened is that's public information, of course, and what happened is they stopped receiving campaign mail because that information was available to campaigns.
There's an incentive.
And they talked about as soon as it was possible to go and vote early, they would run and do it because they knew it would be put up online and the campaigns would know, and it was cut off just like that in terms of being what some of them considered harassed by people running for office. I'm not sure that's that's kind of an incidental result. But it was a very intriguing one. Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, I'm curious if Mr. Dean or Mr. Halverson, if their organizations have any position on early voting.
Yes, we're in support of it.
And so are we.
Mr. Halverson.
We're in support of it too, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, and I'm not sure exactly who could answer this, but we all know that there were 12,000 absentee ballots rejected, and we've heard that there has been some effort to contact those people and get their votes, their ballot corrected. Do we know how many people actually were contacted, and how many of those 12,000, or is the 12,000 the end result of the rejected ballots?
I think that would have to be a question for the Secretary of State or county officials. We don't have that specific number.
It's a good question.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm wondering, is there a place where that number can be collected? I'm not sure if the Secretary of State would even know that if the county has repaired them prior to the getting to the Secretary of State.
Madam Chair?
Senator Carlson, I don't, and maybe the Secretary can answer this, the audits that are done, the random audits that are done of the election, not independent of the of recounts, is information like that, or statistics on that, and I think that would be something that would be data that would be interesting to Senator Betzel as well. Is that kind of information collected, you know, like how many absentee ballots did people put their voter registration card inside the privacy envelope, which automatically disqualified them because it had to be in another envelope? Do we know how many absentee ballots were rejected for that reason or for the date? Or
maybe what I suggest is that we will put together the data that we do have for everybody. It'll take a little time because, but then we'll get that in a subsequent hearing.
That would be of great interest because even though 12,000 is not, relative to 3 million, again, it's not a big number, it's still intriguing as to why those ballots were rejected, just statistically. I mean, or were there 12,000 different reasons? Senator Loring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And now, as I was watching this unfold, there was that the Star Tribune was reporting by county. There's four legitimate reasons in Minnesota statute for rejecting a ballot, and by county, the Star Tribune did have. A, B, C, D for the four reasons that it could have been rejected, and then E, which was wrongly rejected. And was it, I'm assuming that was accurate information and is still, I was kind of watching it and looked at things.
We'll get that. I think that's very interesting for members of the committee. Senator Marty, or Senator Betzel, do you have a follow-up on this issue?
One step back on the early voting question, and I know we're probably going to delve into this a little bit more, but I just want to get a clarification. We heard from the townships the other day that if early voting meant that they would have to have at their local precincts or the townships early voting, they just were not staffed to handle that. And I'm sure a lot of our local officials would be feeling the same way, that they just, election day is hard enough to find the election judges and volunteers. So they'd said that, if you're going to do it, send everybody to a central location and have it done there. Does that, if we went in that direction, would that change your thoughts on early voting? Instead of if some local jurisdiction said, we just simply cannot staff our precincts the way we normally do on election day.
We would still be very supportive of that. I think the logistics are somewhat difficult in this area, and so I think it's really having the conversations with the local election officials and figuring out what works for their county. What works in Hedman County may be very different in St. Louis County, and so I think that we would be open to those sort of customizations that happen on the county by county level.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, but we'd have to pass a statewide law. We can't. I don't think we can have one set of rules for Hennepin County and one set of rules for everybody else. It's got to be statewide. So just as we get into it, we're going to have to.
But Senator Betzel, we actually do have different rules. For example, a township with fewer than 500 constituents or voters may choose. They're not required to. May choose to conduct a mail-in ballot. So I think it would have to be consistent in a county, but the counties could have discretionary authority that would, as long as the process is secure and reliable and consistent, and it's not mandatory. I think we couldn't require Hennepin County to do one thing and Anoka County to do something else, right. But we could give them discretionary authority like we have now in the in mail-in ballots for small jurisdictions.
Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I was fascinated by what you were saying earlier about your what you were hearing from people in states with early voting where, because it was public, they stopped getting the mailings. I have a feeling with new technology, if we had such a process and people with cable TV could do it, I bet you if they could get it so they wouldn't have any more of the awful TV commercials, every person in the state would be voting early.
Well, and there's obviously issues in that, too. Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I think we're leaning a little bit too heavy on quantity. And we're at 78%, so we're better than 5% of the other states. It seems like what we should be doing is getting more into the education of people realizing how to vote. And if we need our election judges, too, I mean, I think we seem to blame a lot on election judges. As everybody knows, you can give people a 20% discount if they mail their something in on time and 10 or 15% don't do it. I mean, they miss it or they're doing things or they don't know how to fill things out right. So maybe, you know, instead of always working on, okay, we need to get more and more people to vote and we got to do all of that and early mailing and whatever, and I don't have a problem with any of that. But maybe along the line what we better do is I think maybe so there isn't more people disenfranchised every year and some of the ballots that we look at, maybe we could do a better job of education, because I can tell you I feel disenfranchised that I vote for a person and somebody else over here doesn't know how to fill the oval out and he puts a Y beside it or an X or he doesn't send his absentee ballot in on time, and then we count it and say, okay, well, you were intended to do it right and whatever. If legitimately the election people don't mail it on time and there's no way to get it back, and I think Senator Lurie had a wonderful case down here, which I totally agree with him, then fine, and I agree that way. But sometimes, you know, when I look at some of these things and I see people going over all these ballots, I'm not so sure that that's great just to have more of them unless we educate them how they have to vote. So I
think also we've heard from
harsh, but that's,
from the election officials that in our more sophisticated voting system, that to have additional training for election judges and to have really highly skilled head election judges in precincts really does cut down on errors of all sorts. Oh. And so, I mean, it's education for voters, but I think that we also see a great need for more perhaps intense training for election judges, too, on election day, for election day experiences.
Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Day, I think, I think when you talk about education, you're, of course, singing from the Lake Songbook. We talk about educating voters. But I think one thing we need to be cautious of as we think about these processes is when we talk about distinction between making existing voting processing easier and expanding the franchise. Much of what we're talking about here, in fact, as evidence shows, early voting, same-day voter registration, much of that doesn't actually increase the franchise. It simply makes it easier for people who are inclined to vote. When we talk about increasing the voting franchise, we're talking about really expanding the number, getting that 78% up above 80%, getting closer to that 100% number, as the Secretary of State was speaking of. And those aren't always these kinds of processes. So I think it's very important as we think about improving and improving the election procedures and processes, then we think about simply making it easier doesn't necessarily expand the franchise, and we're not necessarily talking about the same thing. I'm sorry, Mark, did you have something?
Madam Chair, Senator Day, I think you make an excellent point regarding voter education. I'm amazed at the number of ways that voters ended up marking their ballots in this last election. And I predict that next time around that there will be a higher accuracy rate in terms of how voters mark their ballots.
Well, thank you. Thank you all very much. We appreciate your being here this morning and giving us your testimony. And now I'd like to invite Joe Mansky, the elections manager for Ramsey County. And Ms. Smith, is she here?
who is the elections manager for Anoka County. Is she here this morning? I guess she's not here. Mr. Mansky?
Madam Chair, I'm Joe Mansky from Ramsey County, and speaking today collectively for the county auditors and city clerks throughout the state. I think you have a copy of my notes, so I won't I'll go through this fairly rapidly and just maybe let you ask some questions. But very briefly, just based on our experience with this year's elections, and oh, you don't have my notes.
You don't have your notes.
Okay. Well, I'll send you a copy of the notes afterwards. How about that?
Mr. Mansky.
Yes.
I have actually a copy of your document from January 9th, and we'll make copies of it really
very
quickly.
Good. Again, based on our personal and in-depth experience, perhaps more personal or in-depth than we ever contemplated or wanted, we now have a fairly unique insight on both our absentee process and the recount process. So let me just very quickly go through this. First of all, I think as you heard, we are very much in favor of, first of all, letting voters go online to determine whether or not they are properly registered to vote, and to determine where their absentee ballot is. And to answer Senator Roebling's question, all of our ballot envelopes and applications, at least the ones that we use in Ramsey County, are in fact barcoded. And what we contemplate is a system not unlike what you would use with the Postal Service or FedEx or UPS in being able to track a piece of mail or a package. You should be able to, if they can do that online, so should we. I mean, this is not rocket science. This is technology already out there in the marketplace. We should be able to use our state voter registration system to do essentially the same thing. So we're all in favor of both of those things. As you probably have heard me say before, we're also in favor of early voting, not because we believe you should authorize early voting, but with that we have early voting, that people have already figured out that you can vote early, and they are. And let me give you a couple of numbers. That here in Ramsey County, between the last presidential election in 2004 and this year, the number of people voting prior to Election Day increased by 32%. On the day before the election alone, we had nearly 1,200 people vote in our office. There was actually a longer line of people at our office on November 3rd than at any of our polling places the next day. So people stood in a longer line the day before the election to vote in our office than would have been necessary to vote at any of our polling places the next day. And Senator Pappas, who unfortunately is not here today, was one of them. So was Senator Anderson, because I understand they were going to be door knocking the next day in District 16. So both of them came into our office to vote early, and both legitimately were going to be out of town on Election Day. I can tell you that talking to the people standing in line, that a lot of the people it was suggested to them that they come down to our office and vote early. And so they were. So my advice here is that we might just want to codify what is already happening, and that is people are, in fact, coming in to vote early in person. We are also seeing a pickup in the number of applications and ballots that we are sending through the mail.
Mr. Mansky, of the 1,200 people that came in and voted in person on the day before the election, how many, do you know how many of their applications were rejected and whether any of their ballots were challenged?
I don't know that offhand, Madam Chair, but I can get those numbers for you, and I'll bet you there were at least some. And that
just curious. Again.
And that gets me into my next topic, and that is how to streamline this process.
Do those ballots go? They don't. Those ballots do not go into a machine, however, do they?
Yeah, Madam Chair, unfortunately, they do not.
And that's one of your recommendations.
That's right. One of our recommendations is that if you do come in to vote early, and I hope from this day forward you will never hear the word absentee leave my lips. Henceforth, what I would like to do is refer to early voting and mail voting. Early voting is you show up at our counter and you vote in person. Mail voting is you send us an application, we mail you the ballot, you mail it back to us. For the people who are voting early, what we propose is that we have one of our ballot counters
available, that we give you the ballot just as we would in a normal polling place, that you sign a roster just like you would in a normal polling place, you vote on the ballot, you put the ballot into the ballot counter, you get the same protection from overvoting, et cetera, that someone in the polling place would get because you're standing right in front of the ballot counter when you put your ballot in and then you leave. So rather than having this process where we have to deal with the witnessing and all of the other stuff that not only confuses people but is costing us $2 or $3 per transaction, that we would propose that people voting early put their ballot right into a ballot box.
So, Madam Chair? Mr. Mansky, what happens if or what period of time would you recommend that in-person early voting, putting it in a machine, start?
Madam Chair, there is some difference of opinion in our membership about this. Some would like to have it start 2 weeks before the election. Others would like to have it go just 1 week before the election. I think we would like to bring it to a conclusion, however, on the Saturday before the election and not have any early voting on Monday, simply because there is so much going on that we would prefer to spend our time on. But I think either 1 or 2 weeks would probably be appropriate for most people. And let me just mention this to you. For the first time this year, our office stayed open at night two of the evenings during the week before the election. We stayed open on Tuesday and Thursday night. Tuesday night, we did not get a lot of foot traffic. Thursday night, we did. Saturday, we did. We were open all day on Saturday. I think the closer to Election Day is probably the days when there is most interest. But having said that, we were getting people walking up on the first day that we had absentee voting available, which was on October 3rd, and it was steady for the entire month.
With the in-person, I'm going to try and stay away from saying absentee. In-person early balloting, if it started 3 weeks before, there would be, and the votes went in the machine, those people would have no ability to vote in case there was a tragedy like the death of in Missouri or Senator Wellstone's death, as opposed to mail-in ballot, as long as you get to the polls before the mailed-in ballots are counted, you have the privilege of having that mailed-in ballot discarded. Do you see that as a detriment to early voting in terms of people being disenfranchised through no action of their own?
You know, Madam Chair, not necessarily. And let me point out that, first of all, some of us, myself included, are quite interested in your proposal about having I don't like to call it a runoff because it's not really a runoff election, but a subsequent election in cases where you would have a very close result as an alternative to having the statewide recount. And I might suggest
Think of that proposal, by the way, as being just under the special elections statute, which is really what it would be.
And I would suggest to you that might have been, being able to look backwards, you always see 2020. But in 1990 and in 2002, when we did have this exact situation where we had a last-minute change to the ballot, that maybe this is another possible application of that idea. But going back to 2002, if this scenario were to happen again and we had early voting, the likely remedy there would be, since we are going to have a supplemental ballot anyway, and in 2002 it was that small paper ballot that I think all of you remember, one possible remedy would be that we would not count any votes on the normal ballot for that office, that the only votes we would count for that office would be the votes that were on the paper ballot, in which case we can give the paper ballot not only to the people who are voting on Election Day, but to anyone who voted early. Whether they came into our office to vote again, we mailed them another ballot, or, and I'm hoping that we can consider this at some point, maybe not this year, but that we either email people more absentee ballots who are not necessarily outside the United States, or frankly, just let them grab the PDF files, which are on our website anyway. Let them vote on it and send it back to us. So I think there are ways to deal with, those issues.
Senator Betzel.
I just need a clarification. When you talked about the people who were coming in the day before the election, they were from all over the Ramsey County, different precincts, different cities, I imagine, and so forth. So did you have a separate ballot that would have matched the precinct that they would have received? For instance, Senator Pappas' state representative candidate would have been different from Senator Anderson. So how did you separate all that out?
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, since we also directly administer St. Paul's election, we have a contract with them to do their work, and we have delegated our absentee voting responsibilities to all of our cities except for two of our very smallest cities. Most of our suburban population vote early at their city halls. Generally, the only people voting in our office are residents of St. Paul, but we do get, and in which case, we have 104 different ballots, different ballot slots. We have one for every precinct. We actually have all the ballots for every precinct, so if you are a Ramsey County resident, you can come in and vote in our office. We have the ballots all set up for you.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Following up on that, if you do vote early, as you were talking about before, using an optical scanner and scanning it right there, how is there a physical process then that the precinct book is marked so that you don't double vote? Or how do you prevent the double voting in that case?
Mr. Manson.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, I am really glad that you asked that question because, and I'm not trying to burden my friend the Secretary of State here because I want you to encourage you to give him some money so that he can implement what I'm going to be talking about here. But one of the things that we also want to move toward is to get away from these huge, unwieldy paper rosters, the document that you come in and sign. What we would prepare, what we prefer to have, and hopefully in the relatively near future, is something like one of the laptop computers that you're using today that would have information on the registered voter population. Our preference is that we would have the driver's license information on you so that when you came in to our office to vote early, we would pull up on our system your name, your address, your date of birth, and we would have your driver's license photograph and your driver's license signature. We would also have these items at all of our polling places. If we had that system in place, then when we ended early voting on the Saturday before Election Day, we would then just download the appropriate information onto a USB device, transport it out to the polling place, upload it onto our laptops or poll books at the polling place, at which point they now know at 7 o'clock in the morning or whenever it is that we open who has already voted. So in the intermediate term, that's our view as how we would deal with that issue. I'll keep talking.
Mr. Mansky, I would be concerned about the security in that kind of system, by the way, because we've heard too many horror stories of government laptops with people's social security numbers on them disappearing or being stolen or et cetera. I think security would have to be really, really high priority.
Madam Chair, you raise a good point, and I think one of the things that we may see as a result of early voting, if we go deliberately down this road, is that there will likely be a reduction in the number of polling places, mm-hmm. and that there will be more of what we would call vote centers, where you would go to vote early, whether it's our office or here in St. Paul, we likely would have a vote center in each ward, and they would be more secured facilities and they would have these devices. But that certainly is something that we do want to keep in mind. We're also interested in...
Excuse me, Mr.
Yes.
Mansky.
Yes.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Mr. Mansky, another question I'd have on that regard is kind of going back to Senator Betzold's point about needing some statistics about where the errors occur. I mean, if we utilized a system that relied on Minnesota driver's license. I'm curious, you know, how many of the issues we encounter are people that actually have a valid Minnesota driver's license? I would imagine those people get through the polling place pretty efficiently if their driver's license is all updated, and that we wouldn't actually be getting at a majority of the people who are having difficulty, and I would question how much help such a system would be relying on the driver's licenses.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, one of the things that we've been kind of kicking around for almost 20 years is the idea that, since your driver's license has a magnetic stripe on it, that we would just have a card reader in the polling place and that you would just come in and we would run your card through there. We could do the same thing with a university ID card, any number of other things, where we would it would eliminate the need to have, again, these kind of unwieldy paper documents. And it will also be a convenient way of making sure that we know who has voted, et cetera. So I think there are a lot of things that we want to be able to take a look at. And this recount has raised these issues. It's a good opportunity for us to at least get some discussion going on some things, which I think have been lying around for too long.
Anything else? We would like to come to a completion by noon.
Okay.
And we do have two other people to testify, Mr. Mansky. Senator Day.
I do have a question, because before, sure, when I asked the Secretary of State, he said it was a local thing, and now I wrote,
yes,
a little bit of it down, so now I can understand it.
Okay, Senator Day.
And the first thing I want you to know that I think Ramsey County does a wonderful job, and I think you got good ideas, and I like your demeanor, but newly discovered, and I wrote it down so now I can read it right, newly discovered ballots from Maplewood that were found weeks after the election. To this day, Ramsey County election officials have been unable to reconcile the number of votes cast with the number of voters who signed in to vote, yet the canvassing board allowed the votes to be counted in the recount. Now, I don't know if this is right or not, but whatever you might be able to.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Day, I think what you said is not correct.
Okay.
That we did, in fact, inform the Secretary of State with two different letters what the situation was after we discovered what had happened in Maplewood, and we did not know that, interestingly enough, until we did the recount. We did not realize that there were a number of votes that were sealed up and transported back to City Hall but had never been counted. And in fact, the number of people voting does square with the number of ballots that were
cast. Madam Chair, thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, one quick thing, Mr. Mansky, you didn't mention today, partly because some of your proposals go beyond it, but I remember a good number of years ago you and others were talking about getting rid of the witness requirement because you said it was never checked, it was no security improvement whatsoever, and I remember hearing from some people who were teaching in Japan how they weren't sure if they were legally witnessing because they weren't sure if they were still registered in Minnesota because it had been 2 or 3 or 4 years. Is that, assuming if we did not go as far as early voting and other things, is there any reason that the witness requirement improves security in some way?
Mr. Mansky.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, that's an excellent point. And again, I hope that you choose to view this subject broadly. But if for a number of reasons you want to take a more measured approach this year and then deal with another issue next year, we would strongly encourage you to deal with the witness requirement. We believe that we ought to get rid of the witness requirement and put it in its place some other form of authentication. For example, if you do business with any number of companies on the website, they will give you a PIN number, they'll ask you for your mother's maiden name or in some other fashion to come to a conclusion with some piece of information that is basically only known to you and the person with whom you are doing business, so that they know when they get something from you that it is coming from you. Our proposal would be that we do something similar to that, that we eliminate the witness requirement and instead put in its place some other form of authentication, so that when we send you a mail ballot, for example, that we would have already agreed on some piece of information that you would send us that only you and us would know, so that when we got your ballot back, we know that it came back from you. We're very much in favor of that. Madam Chair, I know that we're short on time, but let me just take 2 minutes to talk about the recount business. Again, I think there's some real interest in your proposal to have perhaps to have another election rather than going through the recount process. Again, if that seems too extreme to some members, another thing might do is to not do the administrative recounts for the statewide offices.
The alternative is just to go to a contest.
Yes. My view personally, Madam Chair, is that would have been the appropriate thing to do on day one, given that now we are I've already been subpoenaed twice in the last 24 hours. I'm sure that there will be more. They're not malicious, by the way. This is just the way that the attorneys for both sides get information. We're in the process of making 200,000 copies of our copies of our materials that will probably amount to over 200,000 pieces of paper. Again, this is something which probably would have best been done a couple of months ago. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you is...
And the cost wouldn't be on the state's dime either.
Well, part of it would be because we obviously are an organic part of the contest as well because we have the election materials. But the other thing I want to suggest to you is that, and I actually did the calculation of this number this morning for at least for Ramsey County, and I suspect the state is the same, that the accuracy of our vote counting, Maplewood notwithstanding, the accuracy of our vote counting here was in excess of 99.9%. And I would suggest to you that the recount margins that we have in place are way too high, substantially too high. The 0.5% for this Senate race would have been something like 14,700 voters. I think, as we now know, it would never be necessary to do a recount under those circumstances. And I think it would be useful for you to revisit that law and reduce the number, or to just have the statewide and the congressional recounts go directly into district court.
Or something addressing that will be in one of the bills coming forward is also to require someone to it would be the recount would be conducted at government expense, but it would require someone to request it. Yes. So that in a race where, let's say, 1,000 votes even represents that half of 1%, someone might say, well, you know, the experience is 99% that it is accurate, and so we're not going to go for it, rather than having to affirmatively ask that it not be done. It would be still done,
yes.
but it would be done at someone's request.
Madam Chair, I completely agree with that. And again, Secretary Ritchie mentioned we did the recount for that Supreme Court race. That is a recount which never should have taken place. There was no reason to do that given the margin there and the fact that, as best I know, no one ever came to witness this. This was basically just an exercise of us spending our time and your money, and I think unnecessarily.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Manske. I'm sure we'll be talking with you throughout the session about these issues. Carolyn Curti, is she present? Ms. Curti is the Elections Coordinator and Communications Specialist for the City of Roseville. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record. And then we do have one more person to testify.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Carolyn Curti. I work for the City of Roseville. I do have a copy of my testimony if you want.
Yes, the page will collect it and distribute it.
I'll keep my comments brief. Roseville leads Ramsey County in the percentage of absentee voting. We had 17.3%. The statewide average was 10.3%. This reflects basically our demographics. Roseville has an older population compared to most cities in the state. But I think Roseville is a leading indicator of the rest of the state demographically. This is where we're going. And so we as a state need to have an election system that will meet the needs of our aging population. I've been working on elections for 8 years. And I think one of my strengths as an employee is my organizational skills. I have a strong work ethic, and I think I've developed a good system to handle our absentee ballots. But processing absentee ballots is extremely costly and a labor-intensive responsibility that has several chances for human error. Roseville has approximately 240 election judges. I would guess about 40 of those actually help with absentee voting. They range in age from 18 to 92. They get 2 to 3 hours of training and work on 2 to 4 elections in a 2-year election cycle. Just want to mention the absentee voter process includes a voter completing an application. Then staff or an election judge will check their registration and confirm the precinct. If we're mailing, we print the labels, get the 3 or 4 envelopes needed, send them out. A lot of paperwork, instructions, double-sided. If you have limited English, limited reading can cause, maybe intimidating. We have 2 different forms of envelopes, one if you're registered, one if you're not. Actually, 2 or 3 if you're not, because you got an extra envelope. You have to. All these can lead to human error. If the person is in, voter's there in person, we get them the ballots and they vote. Then we file the application by precinct, and I think that's where we ran into a little bit of our difficulties. We had 13 ballots which were wrongly returned to other precincts. At the end of the night, our judges did not realize that, and they did get later counted. But there are 13 ballots that had to go through that. Once the ballot came back, we would find the application. We would do a quick confirmation that the back was complete and file the ballot for the ballot board to review. If we saw an immediate error, which most likely was that they did not have a signature or they did not have a witness, we would call the voter to explain the problem and ask them what they wanted to do. Oftentimes, the voter would come in and we'd say, do you want to complete a new ballot or do you want to just sign this? And I think about 99.9% of the time, they just signed that. I could talk for hours on this, but I will just go to, I have three things that I would see would greatly benefit improving elections. I think, as Joe Mansky mentioned, just acknowledge that people are voting early. And we need to create a system to handle it. As mentioned, in 2006, Roseville had 9% of people who voted by absentee ballot. In 2008, it was 17.3%. So allow the early voting and allow voters to feed the ballots into machines. They will know immediately whether they've overvoted or have had other problems on their ballot. We would get rid of these envelopes. 4,000. We had 4,000 voters, so it times us by 4,000. You think of how many trees we'd save. You think of the cost of postage that we would eliminate. Of the approximately 90 absentee ballots that were rejected in Roseville, and I have not looked at them. These are just some information. About 27 of them we had signature errors. Those errors that could have been prevented. Either they did not sign, most likely they did not sign it. We had a few where. And we had 3, sometimes 4, sometimes 5 judges. We would look at this and we would compare, do these signatures match? And they were they came down to judgment calls. If we would have that early voting, I think more voters would be coming in rather than our doing it through the mail, and we would eliminate that problem. Again, and as 31 states do allow early voting. Another thing that would greatly help is authorize our cities to process the absentee ballots centrally rather than sending them to the polling place. Processing the absentee ballots while assisting voters can create confusion and lead to errors. We delivered between 200 and 640 absentee ballots to the precincts. I walked in, and you can just see the faces of our chairs as I walked in with these ballots, because processing them is incredibly labor-intensive. Our balloting board will accept and reject them before sending them to the polling place, but they still have to open. They still have to make sure that the signatures are on the voter registration application, that there are voter registration applications. I think we had 42 people that did not complete this application. Had they come into City Hall, we would have known that it would have been done. So, had we been able to feed them through, we would have caught those things earlier. And another thing that happens is that we there are on occasion there was the duplicating issue there with the absentee ballots. We had to duplicate some. We didn't have any errors in Roseville, we don't believe. But let's eliminate that problem that caused such an issue with the recount. And then I think if we could automatically update our voter registration so that when a person gets a new driver's license or a Minnesota ID card, they would automatically be their voter registration would be updated. I've had several calls. I think one a man. I've lived in Minnesota, and what do you mean it didn't transfer yet? You know, and when he got down to it, he says, "Well, how was I supposed to know that I was supposed to do that?" And I'm like, "Well, all I can say is I'm sorry. That's the law." But if when they would go in and he'd get his new driver's license changed. And I think if statistically, 40%? I don't know, Joe, how often people move. People move every 4 years. Again, you'd be eliminating a lot of disappointed people if you would allow that. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions or comments for Ms. Curdy?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Again, the only thing that comes up, and I don't disagree that it would be very nice to count all those absentee ballots in a central location, mm-hmm. but then that would eliminate the opportunity for people to come in and cancel out their absentee ballot and vote same day, election day, in person. And so we'll have to, if we think about that, we'll have to figure out if that's a good trade-off or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good point.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I don't know that we have people that do that very often. I understand with the Senator Wellstone incident, but I don't know. I have one of my election chairs here, and she could maybe tell us, do we have people who come in and do that? I don't know if that's as big of a issue as to not help the rest of the people.
Well, you know, there are pluses and minuses at every point in which you're trying to follow voter intent and also maintain the reliability and the consistency and the security of the voting. So there are trade-offs and the incidence of it like she's talking about. So that will be another thing for us to discuss. Thank you very much, Ms. Curdy. Mr. Kent Kaiser, is he here? Well, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
I'm Kent Kaiser. I'm a professor of communication at Northwestern College in Roseville, and I'm the former communications and voter outreach director for the Secretary of State, and I served under Secretary Ritchie and Secretary Kiffmeyer. I want to focus on one issue. But first of all, I want to say I'm glad I wasn't, that I'm just an outside observer at this point. I don't envy my former colleagues at the Secretary of State's office at all. And I think for the most part, the election and the recount have gone really well, and our state's election officials have performed really well. And I do want to make one caveat. There are incident reports filed by poll workers in every election. And I've seen many of these incident reports over the years. They just make you want to cringe, and they are truly amazing. We shouldn't have some rosy idea that Minnesota elections are quite as great as our reputation suggests. It's usually just one or two voters or votes in each precinct, but when you assemble them into a single three-ring binder, which is what we used to do in the Secretary of State's office, it's like reading snippets from a sitcom or a soap opera. Now, these sorts of incidents can't be controlled to any great extent, but there were enough problems that could be ameliorated that we should be concerned and should try to do better in the future, because right now no one can really be certain of who really won the Senate election. And some of the problems could be remedied by changes in laws and procedures, and I want to focus on just one, and that is the authority of the canvassing board. First, people should understand that as it's currently structured, a recount is supposed to be about the already existing ballots. And second, people should understand that a recount is meant simply to replicate the election day results. Anything beyond that is currently structured is meant for a court contest, which if everything goes as it's supposed to in the recount, shouldn't be necessary. Unfortunately, in this recount, it is necessary. There are some problems that we saw in this recount that the canvassing board unfortunately could not deal with adequately to give the public confidence in the system. And let me just list a few of them. Some of them you've already mentioned. The first, there were those newly discovered ballots in Ramsey County, which appeared for the first time during the recount, and they're included in the canvassing board totals, perhaps without proper reconciliation to the number of voters signed in to the precincts on election day. The reconciliation of the numbers of ballots sent to a precinct, the number of voters signing in, the number of ballots being accounted for at the end of the day should all be part of not only the local canvassing process, but also part of the recount process. That's not currently the case, and the canvassing board lacked the authority to look into that situation. And then there were those missing ballots. Again, some of you mentioned those from Hennepin County, which were supposedly tallied on election night that couldn't be found during the recount process. A number was taken from the machines and added to the canvassed totals when there were no ballots to back up the numbers. And again, a recount should be about the existing ballots, and that is the ballots that can be physically counted by the canvassing board. There are any number of reasons why the number appearing on the scanner at the end of the night might not square with the number of voters signed in on the roster or with the number of votes actually cast, and the only way to have confidence in the numbers is to count the ballots that actually exist. This is why we have a paper ballot system, the ultimate paper trail, after all. This situation constituted an odd inconsistency for the canvassing board, and again, the board lacked the authority to investigate the situation adequately. And then there was the double counting of duplicate and original ballots of the same voter. Under state law, if a ballot is damaged, precinct officials make a duplicate, mark it duplicate, and run it through the machine on election night. The originals are marked and put in a separate envelope. Now, during the recount, there were numerous precincts that couldn't match their duplicates to their originals. The canvassing board staff told recount officials to count the originals, but in precincts where duplicates were incorrectly left unmarked, both the originals and the duplicates were included in the recount totals, and this has led to more votes than voters in at least 25 precincts' recount totals. The board refused requests to reconcile the discrepancies, and they did so rightly, instead ruling that issue must wait for the contest phase. Anyone familiar with the real-life election day activities in the polling place can understand why the election judges might have neglected to write the word duplicate on the ballots. They get very busy, and writing that word on the ballots doesn't really affect what they're doing on election day, only the aftermath, and they may not even realize that this and think the procedure is sort of superfluous, because there are, after all, a lot of redundancies built into the system. And then another example, there were those what we call incorrectly rejected absentee ballots, or IRABs. A recount should be about all of the ballots, not ones that are cherry-picked by campaigns or local election officials, and the canvassing board should have the authority to look at them, all of them. Thus, we have a situation where the canvassing board has some authority, but not a lot. It leads to inconsistencies and ambiguities and, unfortunately, drags out the process that seems destined to wind up in court anyway. It's terribly unsatisfying for the voters and for observers. I know it was thought when we instituted the hand count recount procedures that this would be the best way to do a recount, but now that we've seen it in action, maybe we need to rethink that idea. The bottom line here is the legislature should either streamline the administrative recount process, perhaps by allowing for simply running the already accepted ballots back through the scanner so as to be able to get on with the contest phase, or give the canvassing board more authority to take testimony and consider evidence. The board does include four sitting judges, after all. They have the ability to do this. If only they could have the authority, this would reduce the likelihood of a court contest, and it would provide voters with the satisfaction they desire and deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Are there comments or questions for you? I think, you know, we have heard common concern that you raised as well from a number of different people about the campaign's participation in the, whether an absentee ballot was going to be accepted or not. And I think we will try and do something to address that. And we're also going to be looking at
the issues of the authority of the canvassing board and the membership of the canvassing board. Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank you for having this meeting. There's a lot of things state and local government committee does, but this is probably one of the more serious things that we've ever had before us, and mm-hmm. and it's one of the more important things, and I just want to thank you. It's good to hear from everybody, and we'll hopefully sort it out.
Yeah, we hope so. Thank you very much. There being no further business, we will not be we'll meet on Monday in room 123. We'll be having a presentation on the Drive to Excellence. We will not meet on Wednesday because of the One Minnesota conference. We will not meet on the following Monday because it's Martin Luther King holiday. So we'll meet once next week and then once the following week. And then I think we'll have more regular meetings Mondays and Wednesdays. The committee stands adjourned.